All right, time for American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. This is Tom Ryan. I'm your host. With me, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, who actually is with me, but not exactly physically at this precise moment. She'll be here any second. I don't know. Something's crazy with traffic lately. It's been really weird. I've had trouble all this entire week getting to the station on time. But I walked in. Heidi's outside parking the car. And let's get to it. Wednesdays, as you probably do know, we've been working our way through a list of albums. I'm actually working through two lists simultaneously. One list is meant to represent the 500 greatest albums that never made Billboard's Top 40. It's actually going to become a book with essays on all of those songs. And the other list to correspond with, to go with that list, to more or less complement it, I suppose, is a list of 500 of the greatest albums that did make the Top 40. We spent most of last year, maybe even a little bit more than that, running through the first 50-some-odd albums that did not make the Top 40. And this year we went back to start working our way through the albums that did. And today we're going to cover album number 24, which, starting in January of 1964, this finds us in December of 1965. Same place we were last week when we covered the Beatles' Rubber Soul album, which was number 23. Actually, before that, just to remind you, we covered a Frank Sinatra album, and we actually felt as if there was a big surprise because so much of what we're covering for 64 and 65 seems to be from the quote-unquote Big Four. In America, that's Bob Dylan and the Beach Boys, each representing a different coast and very distinct aspects of American music. Very, very different, obviously. And from Great Britain, the other two out of the Big Four are the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, who represent something, again, well, in this case, actually quite similar, but just different sides of the same coin. The British invasion, good guys versus the bad guys, so to speak, is how it was set up back then. The Rolling Stones were the bad Beatles. And but one of the most modern things that a modern-day music fan might find fascinating about, you know, back then is the pace that the artists worked at back then. The Rolling Stones had released their previous album in July of 1965 here in America, September of 65 in England. For some reason, it was delayed in Great Britain. And here it is, only December, less than half a year later, only 3 months from when they put out the album in Great Britain, and they have a whole brand new album. It's just, could you imagine if, like, today's artists put out three albums a year?
Well, that's what the record companies really wanted. They felt like they had to strike while the iron was hot or something, so to speak.
Exactly. But the thing is, I'm sure they still do feel that way, but they just can't sap that much material out of artists any longer. It's just not really possible. But they were doing it fine. In fact, you know, basically, the thing that's most crazy about it is, I mean, that was the rule, not the exception. And it boggles my mind to think that these artists could have worked that fast while still coming up with material that we still consider to be classic. We're covering these albums now because these are truly great albums. They still sound great. In the case of today's album, it's the Rolling Stones album December's Children and Everybody's. That's the name of it. It was their fifth album here in America to come out. And basically, this came out, let me just see if I can get my notes here. The release was so close to the British version of Out of Our Heads that the label used the exact same cover for that album for this album in America. So the cover for Out of Our Heads in Great Britain is the same cover on America's December's Children album. The songs on this album have got a really wide time span. This is really an album of odd bits and ends, really. Stuff that seems to be some stuff lying around, some new material. Some of it dates all the way back to 1963. And while the rest of it was basically just got done recording, hot off the presses, so to speak, because the Stones knew they had to come up with something to continue the momentum that they had gotten with Satisfaction, their last big hit. So let's jump into it. A crazy, raucous song You know, will you believe that this song is credited to Sonny Bono and Roddy Jackson as the songwriters?
Wow.
It's called She Said Yeah. Incredible. Basically a 90-second song, but it's all you need. You know, it's incredibly powerful. Justin, my engineer, of course, we were just talking about this. He just reminded me that this is one of those songs that a lot of the English bands did versions of. I know that the Animals had a version of it on their first album, and the Hollies apparently had a version of it as well. It's one of those songs. So it must have just been something that was apparently a hit earlier in a different version in Great Britain. Because for everybody to get their hands on it, it's pretty remarkable. But the Stones version has to be the definitive one because of the fact that it's just so raw and crazy. The album, I don't think the Stones necessarily planned it this way, but it's rather interesting to note that side one has got all of the cover versions, all of the songs that were written by other people, while side two has got the original material. And this is around the time when the Stones have just come into their own as songwriters. But since this album has got some older material, that's probably why some of the covers that are here on side one. For example, the next track, of course, the person who the Stones covered more than anybody else, maybe more than anybody else has ever covered anybody else. I think the Stones doing Chuck Berry is about the most predictable of covers that you could possibly come up with. I don't know if there's another band that did more songs by a different artist than that combination there. But here's the Stones version of Chuck Berry's song called Talkin' About You. So that's what a good example of the Stones doing Chuck Berry as good as Chuck Berry did himself. And that's why they kept going back to the well. One of these days, I'm going to have to count how many versions of Chuck Berry songs were covered by the Rolling Stones. But I'm going to bet you that the number is over 50. Wouldn't that be incredible? I really bet you I'm right.
Well, I mean, they love him.
Yeah. I mean, I remember we did an album not too long ago where there was like four Chuck Berry songs on the same album. Their first single was a Chuck Berry song. I mean, it goes on and on and on. They're still covering Chuck Berry up around the time that you get to Sticky Fingers. It's pretty incredible. Yeah, the B-side, Let It Rock, is one of the singles.
And then much later, they did a concert with him, right?
Oh, yeah.
Much later.
Yeah, well, Keith got involved in trying to help him out, you know, bring him out of retirement and give him some recognition. And that's an interesting movie. I forget what Hell Rock and Roll, I think is what the name of the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Very interesting if you're a fan of Keith Richards or Chuck Berry to watch those two go, you know, head to head. Pretty amazing. Well, next up on the album is the track that dates all the way back to 1963. This is so crazy because this is their fifth album here in America, album number 5, and yet this song on this album predates their first album. So you can tell that they're really digging into the well for it. But it's a credible version of a song by somebody who I love as a songwriter, Arthur Alexander. Never got his due. Pretty much ended up disappearing from the face of music for decades, maybe 3 or 4 decades. Had a job as a bus driver until he was rediscovered, came out of retirement, put out a couple of albums before he passed away. Thank goodness he did eventually get some of the recognition that he deserved, because Arthur Alexander has given us some amazing material. He wrote Anna, which the Beatles had covered.
Oh, right.
And he wrote this song, of course, the Rolling Stones covering it here, called You Better Move On.
You asked me to give up the hand of the girl I love. You tell me I'm not the man she's worthy of. But who are you to tell her who to love? That's up to her. Yes, and the Lord above. You better move on. Well, I know you can buy her fancy clothes and diamond rings, but I believe she's happy with me without those things. Still, you beg me to set her free, but my friend, that will never be. You better move on. Now, I don't blame you for loving her, but can't you understand, man, she's my girl, and I'm never, never, ever gonna let her go, 'cause
Arthur Alexander, like, as I said, poorly underrated songwriter and a performer from the late 50s when he had his own heyday, but popular enough in England to be covered by both the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and even the Bee Gees did one of his songs back in the early days. The Stones, of course, were really blues purists. That's what they started as anyway. So besides Chuck Berry, another major source that they kept going to was Muddy Waters for a lot of their material, a.k.a. McKinley Morganfield. And he's responsible for writing the next song on the album. So here it is, like four songs in a row, four songs that were written by, you know, outside sources, all American, you'll note. Muddy Waters tune called Look What You've Done. Playing our way through the album entitled December's Children and Everybody's by the Rolling Stones, album number 5 here in America. There wasn't a British counterpart to this. Again, it serves as another good example of, like, if you were going to be a Rolling Stones fan, you'd probably do a lot better by collecting the American albums than the British albums, because you'd get a lot more material.
Interesting.
It's odd, but it's just true.
That's
album for album.
Weird, because, like, it didn't happen that way for the Beatles, right?
The exact opposite, really. It's really almost uncanny how it flip-flopped around the other way. I mean, for the Beatles, granted, of course, there were plenty of albums that were invented here in America that didn't exist in Great Britain, but the only reason they existed was because Capitol culled down the original releases so much that they had leftover tracks that they could build other albums around those leftovers, plus the singles and the B-sides that the Beatles wouldn't put on their albums, because the Beatles like their singles to be separate entities. With the Rolling Stones, it's really just a matter of the fact that, I mean, there's a little bit of that, don't get me wrong, because, you know, there are these extra tracks. Like in this example, this album is a very good example of it being sort of a pasted job, you know, pasted together thing, digging a song all the way from 1963 and putting that on here. But the Stones put their hit singles on their albums in England as well as here. They weren't doing the same sort of a thing as the Beatles. So the Stones catalog was a little bit more complicated in the way that it was handled. And if you had to choose from one or another, and what's weird about this is they have done a CD re-release thing about 10 years ago for all the Stones albums. And they released them, after remastering them, they released both the British versions and the American versions. So the poor completists would have to end up buying an awful lot of duplicates. I would advise just to stick to the American albums because they'll take you pretty much as far as you've got to go, and most of the stuff's going to end up on there anyway. Well, now we hit the first original tune of the batch. I wouldn't call this a genius, a piece of work of genius. This was the B-side of their hit single from around this time in Great Britain. It was not the B-side here in America. And to me, it sounds like this is another one of those songs where you hear Mick and Keith kind of trying and reaching a little bit outside of what their range is. Oh, by the way, especially on the vocal, listen to Keith straining for the note at the end of the song when he does the harmony on the last line. I find it rather funny. It's the singer, not the song. Keith. Amazing.
Wow. That was a stretch.
You know, you would have thought that they might have said, you know, let's do another take.
No, keep it.
Pretty incredible. That's the first original number on the album, credited to Mick Jagger and Keith Richard, back when he was Richard and not Richards. At some point, he added the S to his name. Now, we talked about this when we covered the previous Rolling Stones album, which was really just about maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, when we covered the album Out of Our Heads. I'd mentioned that in Great Britain, the Rolling Stones released an EP, a live EP, that was a genuine live EP of them basically playing before an audience where the audience went absolutely berserk. And the songs on that were just incredibly powerful and strong. And here in America, we often might dismiss it. The name of that EP was Got Live If You Want It.
Oh, yeah.
And here in America, we might dismiss it because the Stones put out an album in 1965, I believe, maybe 66. Wait, this is 65. So it was definitely 66. Excuse me. A live album called Got Live If You Want It, which wasn't really live. A whole percentage of it was just.
Wait, so they did two albums by the same name?
What they did was they released the EP in Great Britain in '65, and then since EPs didn't work in America, a year later they decided to create a full-length live album, and they'd used nothing that was on the EP. So they just got another 12 songs and recorded them some of them in the studio, and then dubbed live tracks on top of
hand,
it of people
clapping.
Screaming. Yeah, all that stuff. None of it compares to the EP. The British EP is astounding. And for example, this next track is off of it. Now, this is exactly why they couldn't put it on the other live album, Got Live If You Want It, because here in America, those songs that were on the EP eventually found their way piecemeal on two albums. There are two live tracks that on December's Children that close each side. So this is the song from that EP that closes side one. This is a rollicking version. I consider this a five-star version of Bobby Troup's tune, Route 66.
Thank you. Well, let me hear say you.
Cool version. And that is, just to be perfectly clear, that is with the genuine live audience, not because that came from the British EP. So that's like where you really do get the real live energy of the Stones playing before an audience. With a recording where you can actually still sort of hear the band, which is pretty remarkable because that audience was loud. All right. Side two of the album, December's Children, starts right here. This is the all original side. As you would imagine, after the Stones had written Satisfaction, and it became the biggest hit of their career up until this point, and actually established a bit of a norm for the band. They basically set the bar after Satisfaction. This is something that they had to basically meet, and they continued to pretty much do exactly that right on up until at least, I'd say, 1978. From that point, 1965, right on up until, say, tracks like maybe even later than that, maybe even 1980, if you count like Tattoo You with Start Me Up and such. The Stones just basically had a remarkable run of awesome hit singles. But, you know, it's always the next one. How are we going to top that? And how do you top Satisfaction? It seems like what they more or less did was something that sort of resembled a rewrite, but it was cool enough and different enough to not really feel like it's the same song, but it has sort of like the same sort of an attitude. You can feel how Mick Jagger in particular, Keith, I'm sure very much as well, though, are rebelling against society, especially upper society. The Stones loved to hobnob with the rich and the famous, but they also loved to mock them. And they did it a lot on record. So I have a feeling that this is a bit of that happening here. The follow-up to I Can't Get No Satisfaction was this hit single called Get Off of My Cloud. First Rolling Stones single as a kid. For some reason, I didn't have Satisfaction. I didn't buy Satisfaction. Something must have happened.
I don't think I owned any Rolling Stones until I was a teenager, maybe.
I wasn't even really able to read and write yet. I was really young. And I had this thing that was resembled like a close and play, to play 45s, you know? It wasn't exactly a close and play, but it was like, you know, one of those things you could carry around with you and just put it down. It had a speaker built into the bottom. Plugged it in, and I remember that bluish-white label that, you know, the Rolling Stones were on for their label, London Records. And Get Off of My Cloud was probably what ended up happening was this is the time I already had a ton of singles because my dad had gotten a whole bunch of them for me as a toy, really toys when I was a kid, my favorite toy in the world, and I became enamored with music. And then at this point in time, I guess my mom was, like, treating me by letting me buy, like, a single a week. So I was getting some of the new Beatles singles, and then this week I guess I got the Rolling Stones single.
Nice.
I got Off of My Cloud. But I wasn't probably at that stage yet for Satisfaction. That was a little bit before my time. By months. I missed it by months. Well, here's the B-side, though, because I remember that quite well. I had that single, and I probably played the B-side about as much as I played the A-side. In America, the B-side anyway, was this song called I'm Free.
I'm free to do what I want, any old
I like that song. Even though it's funny. Like, it's another one where they could have used another take, though. I don't know if everybody was listening really closely, but the third time they go around through the chorus, Charlie Watts, you know, kind of like goofs up.
Oopsie.
He literally like misplays the break for the push. And it just sounds so like oddly awkward. And it's one of those things that you would think, you really ought to fix that. But there it is. The Stones, like I said, the Stones weren't really like with the same sort of degree of perfection as what the Beatles had been obsessed with. Now, granted, the Beatles' first album was recorded in something like 13 hours, the whole album. And there's plenty of like vocal lines where you'll hear them basically misspeaking or something at various points. But they knew they could get away with that because the harmonies were still good. But I mean, in this instance, we're talking about, you know, these are glaring things.
Right.
You know, if the
they
drummer
didn't care.
Goes,
they were like, this is rock and roll.
Yeah, right. You know, drummer was out of time, whatever. You know, move on. It's right. This stuff is, you know, rock and roll was not meant to last. I guess it really hasn't because so much rock and roll is, you know, obsolete.
Right.
In this day and age.
Forgotten.
But it wasn't really meant to last longer than the time that it spent on a chart. So every song was considered an oldie about 6 to 8 weeks after it was released.
Right.
So, you know, there were stations dedicated to oldies because and they would literally be playing stuff that was on the charts just maybe 2 or 3 months ago, because that's how the music business worked, constantly feeding new material.
Yeah.
But the classic stuff lasted and hung on. The Stones, Jagger and Richard in particular, were, as I mentioned, were getting a bit more prolific as songwriters, certainly getting better, as proven by Satisfaction, Get Off My Cloud, even that song, I'm Free, to the point where they had written a song and they were finally able to start giving them away. Mick Jagger's girlfriend at the time, Marianne Faithfull, was interested in being a pop star. So Mick and Keith ended up writing a rather gentle number that they had given to Marianne to release as a single. And it was a bit of a hit for her. I'm trying to see if I could find the actual chart position. I had it, and then I lost it.
Then you lost it.
You know why? It's because I am looking for it
in the wrong place.
Ah, Marianne Faithfull. Yeah, her version in 1965 went to number 22 on the charts. Interestingly, the Stones later released their own version and went to number 6.
Huh.
Here is that version.
It is the evening of the day. I sit and watch the children play. Smiling faces I can see, but not for me. I sit and watch as tears go by. My riches can't buy everything. I want to hear the children sing. All I hear is the sound of rain falling on the ground. As tears go by, sit and
Rather interesting. That's the first officially released Rolling Stones song that featured instrumentalists other than the band, obviously bringing in a string section for the background. Now, one of the cool things about doing these shows the way that we're doing them chronologically is you get to hear about how albums crosstalk, how certain artists influence other artists.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly did that in relation to how the Beach Boys were reacting to what was happening in England, how England was reacting to what was happening with Bob Dylan, how Bob Dylan reacted by going electric. In this instance, it's rather obvious that the Stones did that because the Beatles had just had a huge hit with Yesterday. And that was the first time that a beat group had used strings. And I'm sure that Mick and Keith both said, why don't we write a song like Yesterday and we'll get strings? So, you know, obviously they were watching the Beatles very closely and following in them and basically being able to duplicate their success. You could say that they were copying a lot of their ideas from the Beatles. I don't, you know, if you cop a good idea and you do something very unique with it, it's yours. You own it.
Right.
So, thus, As Tears Go By. Let's play the next two tracks back to back, both of them original songs, again, credited to, for some reason, one is credited Richard Jagger, and the other one is credited Jagger Richard. It's just weird to see a Richard Jagger. It's almost as if they swapped roles. Maybe Keith wrote the words and Mick wrote the music. It's hard to say. Mm-hmm. But the two tunes are Gotta Get Away into Blue Turns to Gray.
Blue turns to gray and shine.
blue turns to green. Try as you may, you just don't feel good. You don't feel alright. And you know that you must find her, find her, find her.
Blue turns to gray,
blue turns to gray.
She has gone away.
And this brings us to the end of side two, which, I, as I said, is the originals side, except for the last track now. Both, as I said earlier, both sides of the album end with a live track from that British EP called Got Live If You Want It. In this instance, it's an old Hank Snow song, sort of like a country swing number, Run Amuck, that actually said, in the hands of rock and rollers, it becomes something completely different. The Stones tear this one to shreds. It's called I'm Moving On. Of our program, except I do have one bonus track that I want to play. After this album came out in America, they released a greatest hits album called Big Hits and High Tides and Green Grass. Yeah, that was the subtitle of the album. And with five albums under their belt, they certainly had enough hits to fill up a really good greatest hits album. And there were a couple of tracks at this point in time that ended up never being placed on an American album. So the greatest hits collection gave them a home, so to speak. And one of them was the song that became their next hit single. As they went in order, after Satisfaction came Get Off of My Cloud. After Get Off of My Cloud was As Tears Go By. And after As Tears Go By, in the winter of 1966, they released this track. Again, another thing about society called 19th Nervous Breakdown. Take care, everybody. We'll see you Friday.